So, what's on your mind today? The inauguration.
The inauguration, yeah. Thank God all this is over with and kind of moving forward. But yeah. Other than that, quite frankly, it's just been for us, or for, I should say for me, it's just business as usual. Continue on what we've started, continuing, you know, just following through from last year into this year. Keep working on relationships, keep working on, not just relationships, but, you know, managing the assets, converting as much as we can to our discretionary pool and go from there.
I'm back.
Hi. So what's on your mind?
Yeah, a lot. I was being chased through my dreams all night last night, so that says anything. A lot on my mind. For me personally, I've been, I got back with a personal trainer. I rehired one to get back on that horse.
Oh, good.
So that's good. I ran a couple miles this weekend and I'm trying to, I worked out a few times last week, just trying to get my body right a little bit better to help get my mind right. Like Larry said, for me personally, I'm going through another book segmentation right now and trying to, you know, see if there's anyone I should give up. I'm in a good spot right now where there's nobody I have to give up, but I feel like I'm trying to, you know, give up, you know, some additional clients to get that infrastructure in place to allow, you know, for the more rapid growth. Barry and I just, you know, finished up a call where family have been working on for the last 2 years. And they're finally kind of green lighting us to take over some more assets and show them a little bit more. So they just kind of authorized us to put a few hundred thousand into some of our strategies. Because this guy's one of those, you know, Morningstar geniuses that, you know, he knows everything there is to know. So I'm like, oh, well, what funds are you in? He tells me what funds. I'm like, okay, we doubled those last year. So, you know, do you want to hear it or not? You know, like, so, you know, working on, you know, just kind of having a little bit more confidence with clients and, you know, passing up stuff that doesn't work and, you know, trying to focus on the clients that can. You know, this family has significant means. They own some property in South Beach, you know, some very prominent property in South Beach. So, there's a lot of money behind it. So we're trying to just get our foot in the door there. And then, in terms of the implementation stuff, like Larry said, we've converted over another 20 or 25 accounts in the last couple of weeks to our strategies and we're streamlining even further. And, you know, we also, had a big win with management where we identified a new process where, we've been able to help improve the financial planning penetration by deleting stale prospects out of our system. So that's going to make management look much better when our branch starts picking up major strides by just deleting garbage profiles profiles for people that are dead or, you know, minors or people that are already clients that are being duplicated, you know, so. We did that the other day and we knocked like 15 or 20 clients off our load and then increased our financial planning by like 2 or 3%. So we're just trying to do all those things and, you know, start to get ramped up with the other group and you know, move forward on that front.
And you're forgetting, I was going to say, you know, you're forgetting we're also pulling in assets. So far for the year, I'm about $1 million in new assets. I know you're like at $500,000 or a decent amount right out of the gate as well. That's not conversion. That's new deposits.
Yeah. I'll be close to $1 million here after.
I assumed you would
we
be,
get
yeah.
the next two transfers. So that's happening. And then with the merger stuff, we're expecting. We're expecting that the Repco changes to occur in February. Our team moved our hunting rep code up, where we now get 60% for new assets that we bring in, as opposed to 50 before. Eric and the new team wants us to be at 70 or better. That's something Larry and I are open to that. We have to talk to Barry about, whether we want to do things that way. But in terms of timeline, apparently, our team is considered a team for operational standards, just not payout standards. So that's thrown another wrench in things. So Atlanta and New York are involved now in the merger of our teams. We're pressing them, so to speak. Our team had calls with Carla Ransdell, who the assistant complex manager, and our branch manager, Mike Higgins. They're both supportive and on board and everything. And, we've been surprising a lot of people. I don't think a lot of people saw this coming, per se. Things are going well, and I think they're improving. From the other team's standpoint, last night when I spoke to Eric, the head of the other team, their team's actually going to be giving Christine a new computer with double screens and everything, because they were able to buy those for all their assistants when all this happened, because they get away with stuff like that. So Christine's going to get a new desktop set up. That'll be a nicer ride for her. He's trying to take a slower approach, I think on purpose, to try to let everyone get a little bit more acclimated to each other, as yeah. His group has had some concerns about us taking resources away from them. And through our talks with the other teammates, I've spoken to all the senior partners, and I started to talk to some of the CSAs and operations managers and stuff as well. There's a huge concern around everyone relies on Eric so much for everything that they're worried that we're going to take his attention and he's not going to be able to do all the meetings with them and all that stuff. So there's a lot of insecurity around people using him as a security blanket, and he needs to be unburdened of some of that stuff. From him, he's thinking in years instead of weeks and months. And I think part of his team, even some of his senior partners, haven't really seen the total end game yet.
Yeah.
But we're trying to, I'm trying to push him to have that discussion a little bit more with his team and our team. And also, I want some more clarity on what we as a team should be, working towards and heading towards and stuff. As opposed to, he's like, you guys are doing really well, keep doing what you're doing, but we know that a lot of what we're doing is not going to be what we're going to be doing in the future, or, we're going to be doing things differently. So it's just kind of like figuring out how fast we should transition things and, that side of the fence.
What are you doing in terms of account minimum size and production?
Me or them? Or,
you guys compared to them.
We're still looking at stuff at a half so that we can feed Tim. But by and large, we're looking for, a million to plus or a couple million plus. But we still have looked at some relationships that are smaller for Tim's sake and have used him as the catalyst for that.
So you used to have a minimum of 2 million with a target of 5 million. Now you're telling me that the minimum is 500,000 with a target of 2 million.
We've looked at 500,000. So the 500,000 is not a target that we've looked at and brought Tim in. What Ryan and I are still looking at probably 1 million minimum.
Now I got 1 million.
Now you got 1 million.
So I got 1 million, 2 million, and 5 million. So Ryan, what is it?
I'd say it's none of those. I'd say right now, it's been whatever we could get in the door. And it's either being handed off to Tim if it's small, or if it's something productive, it's being kept, especially with the newer comp plan. This is something that I think is going to be a competing force, so to speak, because if you can get 70% of a new relationship, the way our team is currently structured, if you're getting 35% of an existing relationship, a new relationship of half the size is equally as profitable. So I think that that's an area that we're going to run into some headwinds on as a group.
What's their team minimum?
So their team doesn't have a minimum. It's bring everything in and get it to wherever it needs to get to. So theoretically speaking, let's say Eric, for instance, when I'm on the phone with him, he's telling me he's working all these, $50 million prospects, this, that, and other. So I'm like, oh, well, how many clients do you have? He says 200. I'm like, well, how do you keep up with 200 clients? He's like, oh, well, Ross and so-and-so work with some of them as well. And I kind of challenged him. I was like, I don't know how you keep up with 200 people. I'm like, I work with 40 or 50 families and it's a handful. So I can't imagine you trying to manage all those people and run the models and run the team and close business for everyone else.
What's their service model?
We're learning what their stuff is. Like at the end of the month, we're going to have a call. Like we're doing a Saturday morning with the team. And I think he's going to get Duncan from Burrito in there.
If you don't know what their service model is, they don't have one.
Okay. They very well may not. I know that they use Pareto systems.
Yeah, well, that means they don't have one.
Okay.
Because if you guys have been, how long have you been working on this?
The merger?
Yeah.
With them? Seriously, for a couple of months, but it's been in the works for about 6 months.
It should have been the first question out of your mouth. What's your service model?
Fair point.
Well, I mean, they don't have one, okay? They don't have a minimum. They don't have a maximum. And they don't have a service model. Congratulations, you're going into chaos. They think they're cool and they're doing a lot of business, but you got a lot to teach them. And I would not suck yourself into their vortex of undisciplined, no model business.
I'd agree. That's part of it. We can still maintain minimums. We can still maintain the clients that we have. We can still keep our minimums, what we want, and use Tim or somebody else in that process. But if we're still doing 12-4-2 and if we're still doing what we've been doing for the last couple of years, that can stay the same with inside of the structure. Now, if we're growing, obviously we're going to grow faster. We're going to grow better. They're going to see us and then they're going to come back and say, hey, you guys are doing it right. They even had I was blown away a little bit, Rob, that one of the younger guys on the team basically pulled up their book of business and said, if we get rid of these accounts, this low margin business, low deposit business, that it will help us give it to the call center, that it will ultimately help us. And the answer is yes. That's stuff we've been doing 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and every year since. But, they just had that epiphany. So,
Ryan,
a lot of the smaller accounts lead into bigger accounts, or there's relationships that are there, but it's
Larry, it's where your time and energy is going. Okay. If you want to catch fish in Charlotte Harbor in the Gulf, you know what you're going to get when you go to certain areas. You go to Bull Bay, outside of Bull Bay, you're going to catch a lot of small trout.
Right.
If you want to catch large grouper, large snapper. You go 20, 30 miles out in 150 feet of water.
Right.
Okay. It's exactly the same thing. If you're going after $5 million accounts, you go way out every day. You don't go to Bull Bay. Okay?
Okay.
The point is, where are you going? And Ryan, don't get sucked into the 70% bull, I'm sorry, the 70% crap. Okay? That guys get sucked into this short-term mentality crap.
Rob, I'm not getting sucked into the short-term mentality stuff. You just asked what the team was up to, and I told you.
No, you told me, well, we're going to lower our minimum because you get paid out at 70%.
No, what I said is what I was afraid of is that's going to start to creep in on our team is what I said.
Okay.
Like I've been giving away people. I sent you my entire client list, last week. And like I said, I'm looking to consistently trim that. And at this point, I'm not working with a lot of people that are under those levels. And in terms of the new clients I brought on, I'm only maintaining new clients that I think have the potential to be significant. I mean, the only new clients I brought on last year were 2.5 million, 2 million, 2 million, and I expanded a $500,000 relationship, and I got the spouse's other money outside that was $500,000 that, to bring that up to 1 million. But those are my new relationships that I'm responsible for. The additional stuff that I have, I brought in a $600,000 one that's the mother of a $2 million client. So that household butler relationship is intact. So what I'm saying is I'm trying to remain disciplined, but I am worried as the transition happens and as people are less confident that it's going to be more of a challenge to maintain that. Like I had a discussion with Mary Beth about like, I may see a pay decrease this year because I'm trying to clear underbrush and make sure that we're going to be able to hit the ground running here. And then from my side of the fence, I've been telling my clients that I don't plan on working with a lot of people. You know, I may need to help others close business more, and that's going to leverage, you know, I'm going to get leverage with managing some of that money, hopefully. But, you know, I will say that when that number goes to 70 to 100% of what you kill, that temptation is going to become even greater to take on those smaller accounts. Like, you know, for myself and for everyone, I would imagine, you know.
Okay. So what you just said makes no sense. Okay.
Okay.
You should never take a pay cut under any circumstances, particularly plan on it.
Okay.
Right? It's unacceptable. Whatever it is that's keeping you from making more money should never happen.
So for me, it would be converting away some of my commissionable business to manage money to leverage more time in the future. And it would be, like I said, to give away some existing accounts before I replace them with other accounts, potentially, to put pressure on me. I'm not planning on making less money. I'm just saying, like, you know, last year I was up 30%, and my wife was asking me if it was a fluke, and it wasn't a fluke.
No,
but
you should be up another 30 or 40% this year.
Yeah, if I can bring in $20 million, then if I give away 10 accounts that are $4 million to Tim, then it's not going to be a big deal.
Right.
That's what my game plan is, but I'm just saying it's a risk to sometimes take those steps, like, you know, to give away the stuff before it's fully replaced. I could just wait until I bring something in and then give something away, but I feel like that almost
right
half measure.
You're right. Give measures. It away and then you'll get it. But mentally, mm-hmm. not equivocate. You know, you're familiar with the psychology of winning, right? And the psychology of sports. A lot of what you're doing is psychological. I mean, what you guys are playing at this point is a psychological game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What you visualize, what you imagine, what you think will going to happen is what will happen. If you equivocate, if you make up stuff, that's what will happen. Okay, if you take, just think about, you're a golfer, right? I don't pick your sport that you guys follow. Right. You go out there thinking, you know what? I didn't practice enough. I'm not ready. I'm not going to win this tournament. Well, you would be guaranteed you're not going to win that tournament.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you make up all the excuses in the world, this is why it's going to be a down year. Well, put it in the bank. I bet $100,000 you're going to have a down year. On the other hand, you say, you know what? I'm giving away this business, and it's going to put enough pressure on me. I am going to make up for it. Trust me. Okay? It's psychological. It's the game. You think you're going to win, you're going to win. You think you're going to lose, you're going to lose. Your brain is an amazing predictor of what's going to happen. Goal setting is the most powerful thing you can do in the world. And if you believe it, it will happen. If you don't, it won't. I watch people. I'm an athlete. I watch sports. I play sports. I can beat most people in any tennis or golf or any sport where I can psych them out. I'll beat them because they just aren't mentally tough enough. And that's what this is, mental toughness. And just saying, you know what? I gotta go out every frickin' day into the deep water. But, today I'm not going to go in the deep water. I'm going to do paperwork today. Well, how many big fish are you going to catch that way?
Yeah, none.
Larry, right? You're kind of nodding over there going, you're right, Rob. You know, it's easy to get sucked into this game of excuses. There's nothing that you said that's important enough to stop going into deep water. You guys can bring in $100 million this year if you get your act together and get your head on straight. Do you know how much money there is out there? People that were worth $10 million are now worth $30 million. It's crazy. The multiplier effect of this market, a lot of people were up last year, 25, 30, 40%, 2 years in a row. On $10 million, that's like $7 million of new money. And they're no more equipped than they were before to manage it. And you guys have an answer. You're not like one of these rookies that going, I'm not sure if I should use ETFs or something else, you know?
Right.
You actually have a story to tell. Are you kidding me? You got a story to tell with more money than they're ever seen in the world. And you're talking about minimizing acquisition this year? Are you joking? I wish I could see you, Ryan. I'd punch you.
No, I'm not talking about minimizing acquisition. I'm talking about taking the plunge to actually do it. You know, last year, business was so strong and it was making so much money off of what was here. And quite frankly, I didn't spend the time, you know, and part of that was probably because things were going so great. But like, I've recognized, to your point, I'm fishing from the beach. And you know, like every once in a while, I maybe hook up with a tarpon, luckily, but you know, like, you're not going to catch anything big when from where I'm standing, you know? So I'm trying to say I'm going to do it, but I'm just saying I recognize that like it could take a little while to, you know, I've supposed to have been doing all these things the whole time. I was supposed to be getting on a board. I was supposed to be working my centers of influence and all those things. And I did not do those to the degree that I should have, or to any degree on some things. So,
but you did your center of influences.
Some, but not much. I mean, or whatever I did with them has not panned out to anything. You know, let me put it that way. Like, yeah, I've talked to them a bunch or whatever, but nothing's come of it. So, you know, did I do stuff? Yes. Did I get results? No. Does that mean I did it wrong? Maybe, you know, am I talking to the wrong people? Very possibly. But I was just saying, like, from my side, when I'm talking to my wife, I'm talking in worst case scenarios where, like, if I focus solely on new client acquisition, you know, for 6 months and don't really get anywhere and the market goes down 20% and I'm converting money over to managed, it's going to be, you know, in that scenario, I would be hard pressed to not, to beat the prior year. But I understand what you're saying in terms of, like, you know, one of my favorite quotes is like that Alice in Wonderland quote where she comes across the Cheshire Cat and says, Cheshire Cat, I'm lost. He says, well, where do you want to go? She says, I don't know. He says, then it doesn't matter. You know, like, you know, which road do I take? He's like, it doesn't matter if you know where you want to go. So I'm saying, like, I know where I want to go. But you know, from my side of the fence, I'm now entering, a place that makes me very uncomfortable, a place where I have to confront failure and confront, you know, asking for the business and making relationships more somewhat uncomfortable. And I'm trying to put myself out of my comfort zone is what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to psych myself out with negative talk. I'm just, like I said, I'm just trying to, get my head to a place I haven't been, if that makes any sense.
Okay. I guess I hear you. I think I understand, but,
I've been thriving off consolidating existing clients' assets is what I've been doing. And at a certain point, your existing clients run out of outside accounts. You know, like, I have almost all the money for my top 20 clients. Like, unless they're flat out lying to me, you know, like, I know that
each one of them has given you how many introductions?
I'm trying to think. I have a handful that have given me a couple, and then the majority have given me zero.
Right. So it's time, right?
Yeah.
How have you done for them?
Done great. And I've been.
Are you not giving them 12-4-2? Here's the point, guys. You've earned it now.
Right.
Now you would have gotten the introductions even if you were doing El Crapo model, okay, Pareto or whatever, something else. But you're giving them, you would have gotten the introductions then because they like you and they want to help you. But now you're giving Supernova plus great performance. When are you going to ask?
Right.
When are you going to get?
When we start asking.
If not now, when? I mean, come right. on. In the middle of a bear market?
Right.
So, I mean, if you just say, okay, every one of my top accounts, I'm going to talk to them and say, look, you know, one of the obligations that we have as associates, business partners in this venture is to help each other. I help you, you help me. This is what I need. Okay. Think about it.
No, you're absolutely right. And I need to do a better job of, like, I've been telling people are telling me, oh, I'm thrilled with how things have been. I say, great. Tell all of your wealthy friends, you know, like that's, it's almost reflexive that I'm saying that, but I need to have a better conversation about that and maybe help tease some names out of them and actually do the VIPSA process.
Here's
I need to work on articulating my delivery of that better.
We're gonna on our next call, we're gonna do some brainstorming. and we're going to brainstorm about who would be a good fit for us. And just tell them. Say, next time we're going to brainstorm. Who would be a good fit? Just think of a couple people that would be a good fit. You know what we, what our minimums are. You know who, you have good friends. You have people. Who is not getting what we're delivering? You can go through the whole Bill Cates model and do your survey, but if you're not going to do that, then just ask.
I've started asking folks, just briefly, I said, you know, when you talk about us, when you talk about us with your family and friends, what do you say? How do you describe us? So to get them talking and to start thinking that a little bit, maybe it's a little softer than come right out and asking, but you know, how do you describe what we do? So I can get their feedback on what they think is important. And more importantly, try to get them thinking other folks that they know.
People can't interpret what it is you're trying to say unless you tell them. I mean, you guys are expecting them to be walking around thinking about you. I mean, it's kind of a fantasy land. Right?
Okay.
I mean, they're not thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves. They're not going to know what you want unless you ask and tell them what you want. We're going to be taking on 3 or 4 new families. We've got this merger going on. We'd like to add 3 or 4 new families. We think it would make a great impression on our new team. I don't care. Make a story up.
Okay.
I mean, I should ask for more introductions. I don't, right? I mean, I have people that just send me business. So I could do the same thing. We all could. It's not you guys. It's every human being, okay? If I asked you to brainstorm about who I should be doing business with, would you be offended?
No.
Ryan, would you be offended?
No.
Okay, what would you do?
I'd think about who I can introduce you to.
Right, and then you'd introduce me, right?
Yeah.
And how would you feel about that introduction?
Confident.
Confident, right, in both people. And it would it make you happy or sad?
Happy.
Right.
Yeah, it might not make you joyous, but it would make you feel like you're helping them and helping me, right? Which makes you happy. So when you think these guys, you're doing some damage to your relationship, don't. I'm not damaging my relationship by bringing up brainstorming about who would benefit from my service. I'm just entering into commerce, right? That's what we do. Capitalism, commerce. We like commerce.
Is there anything you don't say to clients? Like, clearly you don't want to be like, well, look, I've made you so much money, you owe me, because then they can say, I pay you for this, go kiss my ass.
Don't make racial remarks.
Racial? Okay.
Other than that, sky's the limit.
No, so early on, you know, I've always had an issue with being considered a salesperson. Like when I did my training, like at Smith Barney 12 years ago, they told me I had a lot of cognitive dissonance around being called a salesperson. Like, you know, like for me, that's why like I've been able to hide behind the financial planning or the money management or the whatever, you know, like, whereas I've always been targeted for sales roles because I love being around people and I love talking to people and I'm the guy at the party that knows everyone's name by the end of the party, but I hate making people uncomfortable and asking them for business, you know, like, the only time I feel like the only time I flat out ask for referrals is when it's for like my sister-in-law or somebody else that I'm trying to get business for. Like, I don't do it for myself. I feel more comfortable doing it for other people almost, you know? So I've always, you know, been aware of this. And to your point, you know, like, I think, you know, hearing you say it, like, you know, if we're giving them good service and we're crushing performance wise, if they're not going to give us a referral now, then they're never going to, you know, why wouldn't they at this point? You know, like we just got through one of the toughest patches ever, politics, you know, global shutdown, everything. And like the majority of my clients beat the market with 50% in stocks. Like it was crazy. You know, like I talked with Jeff Haber today, Larry, and you know, he's you know, beating the market with 52% in equities. It's a joke. Right. Because the 52% equities has done so well. And then we've done some other things sporadically for clients. And,
so you know, your risk adjusted rate of return is dramatically better. It's outperformed and took half the risk.
Yeah. It's been crazy.
And you're giving yourself no credit for that.
Ryan, when I go back and talk about accounts, we'll look at what it is and go from there and they'll say, well, those are good returns. Yeah, but that's not the best part. The best part is in March when the market was down 30%, you know, your account was only down in the teens. So if you look at some of these, our long-term growth model or our balance model, you know, their risk adjusted returns are substantially better as well. So, I mean, that, you know, I try to make up or bring up that point about the risk and the volatility and how we've been able to manage that more importantly through this, you know, through this time frame.
Yeah, Rob, our flagship beat the market by 11 or 12% on the downside. And then when the market reversed and went up, we beat by 10 or 11 on the upside. Like, the numbers have been staggering and we just, you know, we need to man up and ask for the business. That's really what it is.
Hey, Tim? Tim, are you on? There you go.
He just hit mute. Tim, are you on a motorcycle?
No, they're working on our building. That's me.
Hey, do you guys hear it?
We can't hear you,
sounds
Tim.
Sounds like a monitor showing up.
Yeah, will you just mute, Tim, because we can't hear you. And we're getting some background. There you go. Thank you. Okay. So this was good, guys. This was good, right? This is the difference between success and failure in our business, or success and average. Let me put it that way. And it, not even success, more like outstanding results and average results. You're doing everything right. And can you guarantee me that next year you'll be doing everything right, or 6 months from now you'll be doing everything right, or a month from now you'll be doing everything right? The only thing you can guarantee is 12-4-2. The only thing you can guarantee is service, and you're doing that. And you're getting performance. So what's wrong with saying, hey, next time let's do some brainstorming as to who you think would be a good fit for us? Give them a month to think about it.
To more directly say this, you work with people that are bringing in $50 million a year with less performance and potentially equal service or whatever the case is what I'm hearing. Other people are bringing in tons of money in a less advantageous position than we are.
Well, look at the team you're joining. They're a train wreck. Okay? They think they're cool. And so far, I've heard nothing but a mess. And they're bringing in tons of money. So there you go. Wait till they meet you guys for real. And they go, you talk to your clients every month? Yeah. Well, that's crazy. You got rapid response team? Yeah. You do a financial plan for every client? Yeah. We don't do any of that. What's your minimum? We don't have one. What's your maximum? We don't have one. Oh, really? How do you keep up? So you're the emergency room of our hospital. We'll be the concierge practice, taking up some space in your building. You guys keep up with the emergency room. We want no part of it. Join the team. I want you to do this merger, but don't join the practice management of it. Because Pareto is nothing. You can't explain it. Explain it. They've never explained it to you. You can't explain it. Nor can anybody. When do you send a birthday card? I don't know. To the B client, the C client, the D client? I don't know. Which one gets a birthday card? I'm sorry. It doesn't work, okay?
You're referring to the stratification of clients. You either have clients or you don't have clients, in your opinion.
It's everybody's an A client.
Right.
Right? We know who they are and we know what to serve. We know what we give. We give financial planning, 1242, and rapid response to their problems. What do you give? Mr. Prospect, Mr. Team? We don't know. We give Pareto. What's that? I don't know. Something. I'm not saying Pareto doesn't sound good or say some nice things, but I don't hear a business model.
More importantly, we need to be able to quantify it or talk about it or segment it to clients, prospects, other team members, to make it tangible.
You gotta have a business standard. You gotta have a service standard. This is our standard. This is our minimum. Every client gets this or they get more. This is our minimum standard of service. We'll give you more. But every client that you refer to us gets this. And you can explain it in 2 seconds. Ask them what their, just do me a favor and just ask them what their service model is. And find out how long it takes for them to explain it. And say, how would that sound to a CPA or an attorney as a center of influence? It's just, so what did we get out of today? We're going to look for fish where the fish are, right?
The deep water. Where the big fish are.
So where in your book are the deep fish?
Swimming next to the other big fish.
Correct. Your top 20 clients. So if you get a referral from your top 20 clients, you'll double your business. Think about it.
And we'll all make more money, Ryan.
And you'll make that 70% part will just be a little icing on top of the cake. And when you're done asking the top 20% or the top 20 clients, then go to the next 20. And then when you're done with that, go back to the top 20 again. You don't have to. You know, my brother came into my office one day and he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm prospecting. And he looked behind me and he said, and it was a bookcase like this, but it was filled with books in those days. Do you remember, Larry? Were you around them when we had books?
Mm-hmm.
We had a whole thing of books, right? He said, why don't you ask them? I go, good idea.
Do you suggest that we handle clients that have referred to us in the past differently than clients that haven't? Because I try to, like, for instance, I got a referral from an older client. She sent me one of her best little old lady friends in her neighborhood. The little old lady friend had twice as much money as her. She doesn't know that, but you know, it was a $1.5 million client that referred me, or it was a $1.2 million client that referred me a $2.4 million client. And now they're like $1.7 million and $3 million. It's been going great. And I remind her, I said, hey, I just, you know, I had a call with Sadell the other day, and, you know, she's just so excited with how things are going. I really appreciate you introducing us. You know, like, it's gone great. She's so happy. You know, you really did both of us a great service here.
Is there anybody else we should be working with?
Do I just tack it on? Is that it?
Yes.
Is that all I do?
Yes.
Well, I would just let's have some fun. Let's do some brainstorming about who else would be a good fit among your friends. So you're not asking for a referral. You're just asking her to brainstorm.
Who else's life can I make better? Who else can I help live the optimal, you know, make their spoiled grandchildren even more spoiled?
Do you treat them differently? Yes, you do. That she would qualify as a center of influence, assuming she likes you, trusts you, and wants to give you more introductions. So you call her every month and ask her. And she'll probably have one for you every month. And remember, when you're working with centers of influence, what's your job when working with a center of influence other than a personal one like that? A professional center of influence, what's your job? Larry, what's your job? Do you remember?
Keep them informed on what we do?
Nope.
Bring a referral for them?
Yes. That's your job, see? You do your job, then they'll do their job, right? You're on a team. What's your job on the team? Do your job. You do your job, you hope your partner does their job, right?
Right.
You can't do their job. You can't do their job for them, so all you can control is your job. What's your job? Bringing them a referral. How do you bring them a referral? Ask the enthusiasm endorse question to all your clients. Can you enthusiastically endorse your CPA? No, I need a new one. Good. I've got one for you. So go back to the fundamentals of what we taught you guys. Go back and read the book again.
In the Supernova Multiplier, the VIPSA process is on page 170. Starts on 172. That's the, and that kind of uses the delivery with Bill Cates and that Rod character from a little bit earlier in that chapter, The Art of Asking for and Getting Introductions.
Right.
That's what I've got marked off that I'm clearly not utilizing like I should. And then I think also for Tim's benefit and my benefit, Tim's, I think, focusing a little bit more on the niche approach, sometimes, you know, with some of the things he's going after. You know, for right now, is it safe to say just get any referral, ask for any referral, and then, like, as we get them, we can go more for our niche type stuff?
No, it's a training issue. It's a training issue. It's a training issue. If I ask you for an introduction, I'm not asking you for anybody, right?
Right.
What do I want? You know exactly what I want. I want a team that wants to learn. I want eager learners. I don't want a group of guys that figured it out and they don't care and they don't want to learn and they are stubborn or they're stupid or whatever. Okay.
Right.
I can't teach people that don't want to learn. So you can't help people that have no money. As much as you'd like to, you can't. It takes money for you guys to be of any value. And you have a minimum $2 million. You have a minimum of $2 million, and you got a target of $5 million. And so you teach people what it is that you do and why you do it. And they'll be flattered that they're doing business with you. If you say, we'll take anything, then they think that you're a streetwalker. Okay?
Right. Did David Bartoli's group up in Pennsylvania sign up with you guys? Do you know?
Yeah.
Okay. I did a long call with him and his team. Tim Burns asked me to talk to them a while ago, and I'm glad they got signed on because they have like 5,000 clients and they're doing the
volume.
Yeah,
I've been coaching them for a year now, almost.
Oh, good. So they signed. Yeah, I talked to them quite a while ago. Maybe
yeah,
they're just starting.
I've probably done 12 teams. I've done 10, 12, and I got another round starting now of his guys. So thank you. I appreciate it. Bartoli.
No.
They're great guys. They were a complete train wreck when they started.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it was so bad where
good,
it was like,
good producers,
I was even wondering.
Good producers, stubborn as hell. Really stubborn.
Most
had it all figured
most
out.
Most good producers are, right?
Right. Had it all figured out. Oh, they were, we got it. We got this. We'll listen. We'll audit your course.
Just out of curiosity, like how, without divulging any, of course, but like, you know, when I was talking to them, I was really concerned because it felt like, you know, they had like five guys that each had like 400 clients, you know, and they were doing, you know, they were doing good business. Like I said, I think they were, you know, all of them were doing like, let's say like $1 million to $2 million or something. But it was like on 400 or 500 people. Like I don't even know how they were living their life.
Doing great. They're a good team. They should go through the program 3 times because each time they'll learn something and grow and get rid of more clients. But you know, what happens. The first round they skim and do the easy stuff and pick up half the stuff that I teach and so forth. But they're nice people. I gave them hell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to. I mean, we got to the point where they were just wasting my time, so I beat them up. And they're good now. They're pretty good. I'm really pleased. I'm divulging more than I should.
No. I spoke to them for over an hour and dug down.
Does it make you feel more normal, Ryan, now that we're not the only ones who beats up? What?
Right. Don't think that you guys are weird. I mean, look, you're human beings. You do what everybody else does. The key success in life is to do what everybody doesn't do.
Yeah. I spoke to them February 5th, 2020.
If you always do the hard thing, you'll always win.
Right.
It's so weird. You figure out what's the hard thing to do. What's the easy thing? Because I'm a fallible human being. I want to do the easy thing. Okay, what's the opposite? I don't want to shine my shoes. Shine your shoes, okay? I don't want to make my bed. Make your bed. Do the hard thing every time. I don't want to ask for referrals. Ask for referrals. And you'll win. You'll separate yourself from all the other human beings.
Yeah, actually, it was about a year. February 6th, 8:45 a.m. This guy's... super, hell of a nice guy. Do you work with Trent Lada and Vero?
I used to.
Okay.
But I'm still with the Bartolis. They're in their monthly, you know, they've done their 12 weeks and we're into monthly sessions. I'd say we're, you know, approaching the end of our first year at this point. You know, I love working with these guys. It's good for me. It's good for them. I like tough teams that are successful but need help. You know, it doesn't do me any good to take on a perfect team, but I've got to have people that will listen. And they really wanted to learn. And they're trying. Mm-hmm. You guys do too. You want to learn. Nothing that I've said today is something that you don't know. Okay. All I'm doing is telling you once again what you already know and reminding you. And that's what you need. We need you. What do coaches do? Do they really teach you something new about football every game? No, they teach you what you already know and get you to do it right. Okay, we've gone a full hour, guys. That's crazy. Okay, supposed to get a half an hour. But I appreciate it. The fact that
thank you.
Hardworking. Now go and do the hard thing. Tell me what hard things you did this week or this month. In the next 2 weeks, okay? Do the hard, do something really hard that makes you very uncomfortable. Okay? See ya.
All right, okay, thank you.
Have a good day.